Hello, everyone. Welcome to an all-new edition of the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay. And we've finally made it to the NBA Finals, the matchup we've all been waiting for all year long, the Golden State Warriors, and the rematch between the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James. I want to go ahead and welcome my co-host, as always, into the show, the improbable, the amazing Clay Schrader. Clay, how we doing, buddy?
I don't know about all that, but I'm doing pretty good.
What an intro to the show, man.
That's a great intro. I appreciate that. It's been one of those Fridays. I mean, that's going to lift my spirits a little bit with that. Appreciate it.
Well, good. No problem at all, brother. We've finally reached the weekend. We've already, you know, last time we did a show, the Thunder had the Warriors on the ropes, and they were down 3-1, and then Golden State made a crazy comeback, something that had only been done 9 times before them, which is come back from a 3-1 deficit in the series in advance, and they've made it to the NBA Finals.
It happened. The
first game was last night, and man, what a crazy game we had. A lot of people were thinking it's going to be just punches thrown by all these stars taken on the court last night with Steph Curry, you know, and Klay Thompson, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, all these guys just going to be taking shots up the floor, pretty much like an all-star game. And almost the total opposite happened. It was the bench with the Golden State Warriors who outscored the Cleveland bench 45-10, led by Sean Livingston, the backup point guard who's, you know, had an amazing story to this point in his career. Goes off for 20 points to lead the Warriors to a 15-point victory in Game 1.
Yeah, Sean Livingston did play a great game. I thought Andre Iguodala had another great, you know, he had a great series last year in the finals, and I thought he played great last night as well. There was a Harrison Barnes. I mean, he played really well at the beginning of the game. He didn't come off the bench. He starts, but I thought he played pretty well. And your boy Barbosa had a little flashback.
Yeah.
2008, 2009. Barbosa showed up last night.
So, going back to 2007, Phoenix Suns Barbosa, yeah. Man.
Yeah, it was impressive.
But you knew coming out of the gates when Harrison Barnes opened up 3-for-3 to lead the Warriors, it was going to be a different kind of night than we were accustomed to seeing from both of these teams. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson really struggled from the field. Not only did they, whenever they got open shots, which was rare, you got to credit the Cavaliers' defense by roughing Steph Curry and not getting Klay Thompson open looks. But when they did have decent open shots for those guys, they still couldn't knock them down. So they actually combined 8 out of 27 from the field. They combined for 20 points. And it's just a crazy story. If you're the Cavaliers and you go into this series, you have to steal at least one of these games in Golden State to feel good about the series. You would think this would be the game. Whenever the Splash Brothers are struggling, you got them on the ropes. They've obviously are not in the same rhythm that there have been here recently, you know, making that strong push to finish the series with the Thunder. And now you get them in the finals. You hold both of them guys to 11 and 9 points, and you still lose by 15. Something's a little off there if you're the Cavaliers. You can't feel too good about that.
No, you can't. We kind of use the same game plan in Game 2 and just see if the Warriors bench can play like that again, or the other players for the Warriors can play like that again. I mean, you know what I mean? You almost don't think that Lightning could strike twice like that if you're the Cavs. But at the same time, you don't want to lose again. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of adjustments they make. Tyronn Lue and his first year, which by the way, Tyronn Lue last night, I might as well have been coaching the Cavaliers last night. He had no control over that team whatsoever. It really, I don't know, it just didn't sit well with me. You could tell Golden State was the better coach team last night, and it wasn't even close. That's no disrespect to Tyronn Lue. If anything, it's a slap in the face to the Cavaliers players.
It was, you know, one of the things everybody had talked about leading up to the finals was, you know, one thing that stands out different from this year's finals compared to last year's is not only do you have Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving healthy, but you made one of the biggest trades at the trade deadline, pulling in Channing Frye, and he was going to be he was the guy you got to beat the Warriors if you met him back in the finals. He only goes for 7 minutes last night. If you're Tyronn Lue, this is kind of your X factor here. You're only playing for 7 minutes, Kevin Love. I feel like they kind of forced him at times. He ended up with 37 minutes total, and they really tried to get him to go back in the paint, trying to go back to his Minnesota days. But, I mean, the way they've had – the way they've used him for the last 2 years is basically having Kyle Korver out there because he's just stretching the floor and attempting threes anytime that he gets a look. And last night they didn't have any post play. They couldn't – I think they missed 20 shots in the paint. If I had that right, they missed 20 shots from right around the rim in the paint. And that's something you can't do, especially whenever you hold the Splash Brothers to just 20 points together.
Yeah, LeBron was doing a good job of getting to the paint and getting decent. I mean, they were contested looks, but they were, you know, close to the basket. He could, I don't think he didn't finish more often than not, which is pretty rare. I guess we'll get to his performance a little later. We could probably talk about just LeBron for, you know, 20 minutes. But, yeah, I thought Love actually played a pretty good game. And I thought Irving was a little bit more aggressive than I would have liked. You know, I think he needs to be more of a facilitator than trying to be, you know, I think he was trying to be too much of a scorer last night. But yeah, J.R. Smith, some other role players, you know, with Channing Frye, he's obviously got to get more minutes, but guys like that, Dylan Adova, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
He's going to have to, I don't think he took a shot last night. He's a pretty good shooter, you know what I mean? He might have took a shot, but I don't recall him even taking a shot. So, you know, some role players like that for the Cavs are going to have to step up like I did for the Warriors last night.
Well, if you look at it, and, you know, we talked about the bench being outscored 45-10 by the Warriors. But you look at the guys other than LeBron James, who shot 21 times, and Kyrie shot 22 times, and a few guys, J.R. Smith, Channing Frye, Shumpert, Jefferson, and Dellavedova, they combined for like 12 shots altogether, like attempts. Well, that's something.
Yeah, I remember seeing Shumpert's afro out there a couple times, but other than that, I don't remember
him. Hey, he had a solid game, man. 1 for 1, 3 points.
He did hit a three? Okay.
Yep, 16 minutes of play.
Wow. 15 minutes and you shoot one shot. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, they got to step it up.
And it's not really a typical game either, because you look at J.R. Smith, who's a guy who's going to shoot it if he, you know, even has any sense that he has any room to shoot at all. He's going to – he's a chucker. And in the words of Seinfeld, he's a chucker, right?
Yeah, he goes last night.
One of the most famous chuckers in basketball. You know he's going to shoot it. He only gets 3 shot attempts all night. He didn't even shoot one until like a minute and a half left in the first half. So he ends up with just a measly 3 points. He finally connects on a three. He gets he dives on the ball after he loses control of it, and he really gets a really bad floor burn on his shooting hand. And that kind of impacted his play in the second half. But at the same time, you're J.R. Smith. You're one of the key guys on this roster that is designed to beat the Warriors, if you can call it that. You got to be able to knock down shots and actually attempt shots, because he had several looks that he could have knocked down. We're accustomed to seeing him shoot anyway.
Yeah. I'm just, part of me is really, really pulling for the old J.R. Smith to show up one of these games and just come off with some crazy jams. But you know how he used to do back in his Nuggets day, but I know he's not that player anymore. But yeah, I was disappointed in J.R.'s performance last night for sure.
You know, one guy who played pretty solid for the Cavaliers who nobody even mentions, Tristan Thomas, 10 points, 12 rebounds.
Wow. Yeah.
Had a really solid game last night. He had several offensive rebounds that were, you would think we were going to go the other way, and he pulls it down and dunks it, and that saves them from going down 17 and gets them back in the game a little bit.
That is true. Yeah. That's a good one for him. Anytime you get a double-double from their big man, you know, because you know LeBron's going to score, you know Irving's going to score. J.R. Smith should score more than what he scored. You know, Fry's going to hit some threes, ideally. But yeah, to get a double double out of Tristan Thompson is big. Obviously, Kevin Love's going to score some. So yeah, if he can keep that performance up all series long, then Clifton would definitely like that.
And LeBron, you're right, he attacked the paint early. He got in the paint and he made his first 4 shots. I think it was like 4 out of 5, and they're all around the basket. He was attacking. He had there was one possession where he got 3 offensive boards in one possession. So he. You knew he was going to go at least for a double-double. He gets 1 assist shy of a triple-double, ends up with 23 points and 12 rebounds, 9 assists. He was a guy in the first half really attacking, doing what he's normally, we're accustomed to seeing him do. In the second half, though, He looked like a different guy. Even though when he did attack, he didn't have complete control of the ball. He lost it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he started settling for jumpers and threes. And that was really at a time where they could, because they got it back down to, two or three there. Then they took the lead a couple times, swapping back and forth. And then when Tyronn Lue took out Kevin Love and LeBron James, and the Warriors had their second death lineup, which is their bench out there, that put them back up by 14 points. And by the time LeBron got out there, you had to start shooting threes just to get kind of back in the game, you had to feel like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, LeBron, that's kind of always been his downfall, in my opinion, is shooting too many outside shots. And last night, I thought he tried too many outside shots. It's not like Josh Meemer, how Josh Meemer used to shoot jack-up threes when he played for Atlanta. I mean, it's nowhere near like that. LeBron's actually a decent three-point shooter, but, he's got to be more aggressive. And I don't. If Golden State, Mark Jackson said it before the game, if Golden State could turn him into a jump shooter, they're going to have a big advantage. Second half, they turn LeBron into a jump shooter. They pull it away. And won easily. And I think if they can turn him into a jump shooter the rest of the series, which you look back at some previous finals that LeBron played in, where they lost, I felt like he settled too much for outside shots. So if you can make LeBron force him to be an outside shooter, then you got to like your chances of beating him, because he's really not a great three-point shooter, in my opinion.
When we look at it right here, and the teams shot identical from the three-point line and from the foul line. They both shot 33% from three, and they both shot 90% from shooting free throws. But the big difference here was about a 10% difference in two-point field goals. I mentioned to you earlier the 20 missed shots in the paint alone.
Yeah.
That's something you can't forgive if you're the Cavaliers, going back and watching a little bit of game one to prepare for Sunday's game two. You have to be thinking of look at the shots we've had inside right around the rim that could have got us in this ball game and kept us in this ball game for the majority of the time.
Right. LeBron had a lot of good looks. I mean, yeah, I'm surprised. Yeah, he had a few that I thought, he's not going to finish every contested shot. He's not Superman contrary to what a lot of people think. But still, there was even a few that I was really surprised that he couldn't finish last night.
And the Warriors, again, are out-rebounded, this time by six. That's something they struggle with all through the Thunder series, the Western Conference Finals, getting out-rebounded on the boards. They did a really good job of taking care of the ball, only 9 turnovers total for the team. That's something you don't expect the Warriors to be able to maintain for the rest of the series. They have a reputation of turning the ball over at a high rate. That's something we'll probably see go up as soon as they get on a roll, they tend to get a little loose with it. So I don't think we'll see them take as good care of the ball throughout the rest of the series. So if you're the Cavaliers, you feel good in that aspect that you probably – there's just so many things to take from this game. You feel good that you held Golden State's two best players to 20 points together, but at the same time you lost by 15 and you had all these other things working in your favor.
Yeah, I don't think the sky's falling if you're a Cavaliers fan. They're telling some positives to take away from game one, but at the same time, adjustments must be made and must be made soon. Game two is going to be a huge game. If Cleveland goes down 0-2, it's going to be trouble.
And let's talk a minute real quick about the Golden State Warriors and some of their key guys. You mentioned Steph Curry and Klay Thompson struggling, but you know what? How about Andrew Bogut? Starting out the game, he gets 8 quick points. Him and Harrison Barnes are leading the Warriors in points, and not only that, but shot attempts as well. They're getting open looks. They're knocking them down. Bogut's getting offensive rebounds and putting them back. The alley-oop to him where, there was a few times where there was one play in the first quarter where Steph Curry dribbled it off his foot and Kevin Love was on him. He got switched on him, and he dove for the ball, Love did, and missed it. Curry gets it back, drives to the basket, and just throws it up to Bogut for an easy alley-oop because Tristan Thomas had to help. That's something they get all the time. Is one of the easiest loops, alley-oops in the league, is Andrew Bogut just standing next to the rim because he barely touches the ball. Half of these alley-oops going to him are almost going in the basket by themselves anyway.
Yeah, I was really impressed with both of them. They really, You know, you could tell the Cavs were not keying on those two guys, and you can't blame them. If there's two guys, you know, not to key on, would be them two. And they stepped up.
Draymond Green was his typical self, getting 16 points, 11 boards, 7 assists. Really great defensive game for him and Andre Iguodala, who both, you know.
He had a couple key flops that went his way.
He did that, yeah. A couple of, in this game, there was a couple of key flops by Varejao, Draymond Green. There was so many different times where a call could have gone the other way that could have impacted it in a different way.
What's funny that you mentioned Varejao? He's going to win no matter what, because he's guaranteed a ring in this series.
Well, it is up to the, you know, like if say Cleveland wins, the team has to vote and say yes or no, that kind of thing. But I don't see a situation where they would go nah, you know, because he's a guy who's been there forever.
He has been there forever, yeah.
So there's, you know, this is where the relationship, you know, goes beyond the game. A lot of these guys are best friends because they compete and see each other all year long. So, you know, some of these friendships run deeper than the, you know, I guess the rivalries of the championship run.
He was there just about since LeBron was there, you know, since LeBron's second or third year in Cleveland, he's been there a long time.
Yeah, LeBron, Azauskas, Varejao.
Yeah.
Mo Williams the first time around.
Yeah.
But yeah, crazy game for a lot of players here. Andre Iguodala really stepped up. It's almost like he has a switch that he can turn on in the finals, like he did last year, because he really didn't play to this, you know, level in the Western Conference Finals. And then we get to the big game, of course, and he does an amazing job on LeBron James, getting a couple key steals, and does the same thing with anytime he switched on Kyrie Irving, gets a few strips there too that goes the Golden State's way. And then he's able to knock down a few open threes and really contribute all the way around.
Yeah, he did.
Ends up at 12 points, 11 rebounds, and I'm sorry, let me get that back here. Nah, that's not right. 12 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. That's better.
I won't say. I don't know. I didn't know you got that many. Yeah.
And how about Leandro Barbosa, who not only does he get 11 points, but he makes all 5 of his shots.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, he just took him and Livingston both. I'm sure Livingston missed a shot. He missed a couple shots or more. He took a lot more than Barbosa, but both of them, I don't remember how. I really don't remember either one of them missing a shot. And like you said, Barbosa did miss a shot. They both just played really smart. You can tell they're, you know, savvy veterans, but they're also really talented guys. I mean, just a few years ago, I mean, Livingston was a really, really good player. Obviously, Barbosa, AI. I mean, just a few short years ago, those were all-star caliber players, and they're still really good, you know, and they're obviously savvy, smart, know what to do, and they definitely played smart. Golden State was definitely the smarter team last night, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Steph Curry may be the best player in the world, and LeBron James, they can go, you know, together about that all they want. People can say LeBron James is the best, Steph Curry's the best, but it's a different story when you're talking about the smartest basketball players on the floor, and that's Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston are two of the smartest guys that just know the game of basketball. And they did a fantastic job last night of, you know, playing to their strengths. They're not guys that go out and score 1,000 points. They don't throw up a lot of crazy shots and crossovers. They play hard-nosed defense, and they knock down, you know, difficult shots, two-pointer shots. I mean, Sean Livingston didn't attempt one single three, and you're not accustomed to seeing that from any player in the Warriors team. All of his 8 shots came from inside the 3-point line there. He gets 8 out of 10. And every shot that he shot was either really tough contested or he's able to shrug off and get a little room, but he never did have a complete wide-open shot, and he knocks down 80% of his shots too. So he played really smart. Andre Iguodala played smart as well. And, you know, Barbosa.
It helps when you're 6 inches taller than the guy guarding too.
Yeah, I mean, he is like the tallest point guard ever, pretty much, until, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo comes in next year and his point guard and changes the game.
The guy from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're talking about Barbosa. This is the guy who was a former Sixth Man of the Year back when he was with Phoenix in 2007. He averaged 18 points off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you kind of forget that he's even in the league until last night he comes in and just every shot that he shoots is going in.
Yeah, he had a couple threes, I believe, a nice drive, high floater off the bank. You could just feel Golden State taking control of the game. It was not too long after Steve Kerr, you know, broke the clipboard, which you mentioned earlier. Yeah, it really was a big turning point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all those kind of.
I don't know if that little fire in it in the players, or if it just so happened to work out that way. But not long after he hit that clipboard, broke that clipboard, I started turning around in Golden State's favor. That's for sure.
You may not be able to tell it from, you know, looking at Steve Kerr, but this man knows karate, and he showed it last night by breaking his clipboard. All this kind of happened at the same time because the Cavaliers were making a push. They're swapping the lead back and forth, and the Warriors get a little bit of a lead, maybe like 4 or 5 points, and Iguodala's coming down the floor to call a timeout, and Matthew Dellavedova comes down the floor, swipes for the basketball, misses, and hits Andre Iguodala below the belt, and that of course sets off this huge thing. We have to review the play, make sure there's no flagrants going on for about 20 minutes, and there's like a minute left to go in the third quarter. I'm just ready for the quarter to be over because it's already 11 o'clock at night. I have to get up, just like you, I have to get up and go to work the next day.
Right.
And we had all this happen at the same time where Steve Kerr was really concerned about his team because he knew that they could take control over the game and they were kind of letting off the gas a little bit because they were up for majority of the game by, you know, double digits in the first three quarters, and they let up a little bit. They let LeBron do his thing where he's backing down people, getting back in the post a little bit and passing the ball around. Kevin Love hit a three here and there. Kyrie Irving ran off like 6 or 7 points in a row, and they really started to let go of the rope a little bit. And that's when Steve Kerr, who and that timeout was, there's no telling what he was talking to Luke Walton about, but he was looking right at him when he smacked the clipboard and broke it in half. And from then on out, I believe right after that personal foul by Dellavedova and Steve Kerr breaking the board, from there on out, it was a 17-4 run right after that that got the Warriors back up and comfortable, and that was pretty much the story of the game in the fourth quarter, is the Warriors just maintain that lead all the way down to the end, end up winning by 15 points.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The fourth quarter, the bench really took over, and nothing Cleveland could do. I actually dozed off at about, it was about 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes later, you know, Golden State was up comfortably. I dozed off, then I woke back up with like 50 seconds left, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were in the game, and I was like, oh crap, Cleveland must have had a crazy comeback. And I looked at the score, and it was still, you know, a 14-point game, and I read on the wild, Curry and Thompson were back in the game. I guess the backups needed a breather after taking control of the game like they did.
You know what, give Steve Kerr credit not only for being super strong, having superhuman strength, but also give him some props for sticking with these guys who got them up by 14 points. You know, keeping Livingston in there for 26 minutes.
That lineup was rolling, and I know Steph Curry is the best player in the league. Klay Thompson's a great player, but yeah, you're right about that. That lineup was just gelling like Dr. Scholes, and then they let it roll. It was a thing of beauty, to be honest with you. I really enjoyed it.
Gelling like Dr. Scholes. I love it.
Yeah.
Puns galore here today on the Sports Report Podcast. So you don't really expect the Golden State Warriors bench to put that kind of effort out there. And you really don't expect Steph Curry and Klay Thompson to struggle that much. So in game two, Klay, what do you see kind of going, you know, do we see more of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson get back to their normal selves, or do the Cavaliers, a mirror image of game one and do a fantastic job of guarding them face up and not let them get open shots?
I think Curry will make a few more shots. I think Curry and Thompson will both make a few more shots. If I'm Cleveland, though, I don't know. You almost have to try and do the same thing. I don't know. That's tough. That's what Tyronn Lue paid the big bucks for, I guess. That's tough. You know, can Lightning strike twice? I guess I would take the chance that Lightning couldn't strike twice and just and try and make the others let the other guys beat you and see if they could again. I guess if I was in charge, but so I think that's just what I think. Cleveland, I mean, I know it didn't work in game one, obviously, and in game one of the series is really just kind of feeling each other out. So I say that, and then Cleveland will probably come out and do the exact opposite in game two. So, you know, don't take my word for much of anything. It's just my opinion. What I would do is I would see if Lightning could strike twice again, because, you know, if you give Curry and Thompson, you know, any amount of cushion, they're eventually going to make you pay. So, I don't know. I think Curry and Thompson will both have slightly better games in game two, but I think it may mirror game one, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Cavaliers, you don't want to do much, you know, different than what you did in game one. Your big three, if you can call them that right now, contributed, you know, 23, 26, and 17. And then we mentioned Tristan Thompson had a double-double. You just need more guys. You need Chang Fry to get more minutes than seven so he can get into the rhythm of the game, get open shots, and really impact the game like he was supposed to when he was brung in at the trade deadline. J.R. Smith, you got to have him take more than three shots in the game. So some of these guys off the bench are really going to have to, you know, just get in the rhythm of the game and shoot more shots, I think, because LeBron's doing his thing. I credit LeBron as much as I ever have last night watching the game, because I watched him do everything he could. He's kind of exhausting himself a little bit, just trying to get his guys open shots. And at the same
time, he made some really good. He's always doing a good pass. And he made some good, I remember one baseball pass he threw to Kevin Love.
Yep, one-handed, and just threw it in the corner for Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the one I was about to bring up, because he was
a good passer,
He's a fantastic passer, very underrated, I think. People just think of his, physical dominance, going in the paint, backing somebody down and scoring on him like that. But he's a fantastic passer. And when you got him coming off a screen, that's one thing that they've had at their advantage all season long. They really took advantage of that in the Eastern Conference playoffs, really just running through everybody over there, just doing what they wanted to and flipping the switch whenever they could. This is a total different team than what they've had to face so far in the playoffs. And the Warriors are coming off arguably the second best team in the playoffs, which is the Thunder, because you got to think, if they can survive, going down 3-1 to the Thunder, who were just exposing every weakness that the Warriors had in that series, and they still came back and won that 4-3, you got to think the Warriors have a little bit more confidence in themselves, thinking, you know what, even if we're down in a situation, we can overcome some adversity and get back in it, because they have to have confidence in their abilities to come back when they're down.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. They've overcame the ultimate adversity. Now, this is really the first time Cleveland faced this kind of adversity. I mean, I know Toronto even the series up, but you could still tell Cleveland was going to win that series. Cleveland's got their backs against the wall, for sure.
I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that LeBron, in the finals, he's lost, five out of the six game ones in the finals. And
that's true.
Every time they've come back to win game two. So we'll see if that pattern stays true this year.
That's a great point. And they need it. They need to win game two big time.
They have to get one in Golden State. But, it's crazy to think about, because you go back to any other – I get that it's – these are the best two teams left, of course. But going back to the rest of the playoffs, we've seen many series go 2-0. Going back to the other team, they tie up 2-2, and it ends up being a 6-7 game series. But, I mean, if you're the Cavaliers, last night was the game you had to win, because the two best players on the other side of the floor for Golden State had their worst game together in 2 years, and you still lost by 15. So that says a lot about this series as a whole, really.
It does.
So if you're the Cavaliers, you can't feel too good about that, but you can feel good about some of the things you did positively that got you back in the game in the third quarter. You really want to pay attention to that third quarter if you're the Cavaliers and go back and look what you did right in the game, because a lot of people's blaming the Cavaliers and Tyronn Lue for what they did wrong in the fourth quarter. But there was a point in the third quarter you thought, okay, here it is. Now we have a game. Now this is the finals right here. We're going to go down the stretch right here. May even go to overtime the way it's heading right now. And the Warriors, of course, took off on that big 17-4 run. But there are some things Cavaliers did that can really scare you. they just have to get back to doing those things and not get away from too much. I know anytime you play the Warriors, any team, of course, that's the team you're aiming to knock off. The defending champ, 73-win season, MVP. You kind of get away from what you do because you're chasing what they do. You want to out Warriors the Warriors, but you can't do it. You got to stick from what got you success so far this year, and you know sustain that and hope that's enough to get a win or two over Golden State in California.
Absolutely.
So we will see what happens in Game 2 on Sunday. It's crazy to think about. I was hoping there'd be like. You know, I'm anxious, man. I want like almost a back-to-back game. I want a game tonight. I want a game tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, this is the last of basketball we're going to have for a while until we get to July 1st and the free agency starts. We have the NBA draft coming up a little bit later this month. So there are some things, you know, on the offseason coming our way, but it's going to be a long year until we get back to actual basketball games getting underway.
Yeah. We better savor this for us basketball fans. Yeah.
I know we may break some hearts out here, but, you know, super-duper honesty time right now. We're getting to a point, Clay, where it's going to be only baseball season.
Ooh.
And if anybody's listening to the podcast tonight, listen, we love playing baseball when we were in middle school and Little League. That was a lot of fun, right? Me and you're on the same team. That was a lot of fun, right?
Oh yeah.
You at first base, me at second base. We were awesome. Now, watching baseball, especially now, getting where we both are so involved in football and basketball. I don't have it. I just can't watch baseball this year and keep up with who. I don't even know who half of these. I don't know who most of the players are anymore.
I
feel like I've lost touch of baseball in a way, because our team, of course, is the Braves, and. I don't know who any of the players are on the team anymore, and I don't know who most of the players in the league are. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, and of the three big sports, it's definitely the least popular, and its popularity is still slowly declining. It's been declining for a while, and it just takes too long to play. You know, to play a game, it's just, you know, it's not a lot of action.
It's 162 regular season games.
Yeah, well, it's a mind game. You know, you got to, you know, it's not just, you know, a physical, fast, you know, paced game. It's a lot of mind. It's a lot of thinking. It's a lot of strategy. And it's a great cost. I mean, it's really a great game. But it's just, I don't know. It's almost like watching a long war movie, like the Patriot or something. Yeah, it's a great movie. But it lasts 3.5 hours. You know what I mean?
End it.
Yeah.
So, just give you guys a heads up. We may not do too many baseball podcasts this summer. We may go into a little bit on, you know, movie rants, movie reviews, Seinfeld, some music stuff. We may go a little crazy with some, you know, healthy foods. Alternative you can eat for this summer to get you out there and get a fit, better you as a person. But we may not lock into baseball for a full 30 to an hour podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be doing a dishonesty to our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't want to hear baseball from us, because we'll be like, well, I heard that at one point in the game, so-and-so did that. I saw a highlight on SportsCenter. And they won, and so that's it.
What was that line said on that episode of Seinfeld? She was like, the Mets won, the Yankees lost, Ricky is unhappy.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson's unhappy. You know, everything's the same, so.
Yeah. The Braves lost, the Cubs won, and I don't know who's unhappy. I guess
and everybody still hates A-Rod.
There you go.
So not too much has changed in a year, except the Cubs are really good, from what I hear anyway. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched them.
Yeah, they are good.
A couple of things to give you guys caught up with. If you've been catching up with our Facebook page and our Twitter page, again, that's the Sport Report. We've been posting all the news that we really find, you know, vital and important and necessary to post out there. A couple of things to get you guys caught up with what we've been posting. Towards the NBA, not only have we reached the NBA Finals, but we've also absolutely completed the NBA coaching carousel.
Finally.
thank God. We had 10 jobs come open this year.
Yeah. A lot of jobs that shouldn't have come open, in my opinion.
I know. I think the same thing. We have, just to give a recap on who we have where now, just to, because it's so hard to keep up with this stuff now. The first big one was Tom Thibodeau going to Minnesota. This is a guy who was, you know, of course, I think a huge mistake by Chicago letting him go. He now becomes the president of basketball operations, and I'm sorry, GM and head coach. And then,
hey, well, let's give each one a grade if you want to.
Sure, yeah, we can do that. Okay, let's go back to Tom Thibodeau, who is, okay, I should clear that up. President of basketball operations and head coach. First year with Minnesota Timberwolves. What's your grade?
I gotta give it an A.
I'm gonna give it an A plus.
Yeah.
You have a young core, you have a lottery pick, and you have the best coach on the market.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Scott, that's a home run hire. Home run hire.
Scott Brooks in Washington.
A plus, another great hire in my opinion.
I give it an A too. I want to see. I'm giving an A too. I'm gonna see what he can do with another young core with John Wall, Bradley Beal. There's a few pieces moving around, and maybe this summer, you know, there's been news that the Warriors are gonna offer Bradley Beal a max contract. He is gonna be a free agent this year. So if he ends up going somewhere else, I could change the culture and change the roster a little bit there. But I think he stays. I like Scott Brooks in Washington. Hopefully they can add some more pieces and get back in the playoffs since they missed it this year. Kenny Atkinson, former Atlanta Hawks assistant, former New York Knicks, Houston assistant, gets his first head coaching gig in Brooklyn. What do you think?
Brooklyn, Atkinson, I give it a B. I think just because he wasn't a big splash hire, but you know what? He's coached under some good coaches. You know, Mike Budenholzer. You know, obviously, I think he learned a lot from him. You know, in these last couple of years in Atlanta, so. So I think it'll be a pretty good job. I think it's it's definitely under the radar hire, not a home run hire. So it's kind of a misfit, in all honesty. But I think he's a pretty good coach. I'll give it a B.
I actually love the direction the Brooklyn Nets are going. Like from when the season was over to right now, they've been perfect. Okay, they got a new GM and Sean Marks to run the thing. As a guy, he's a former Spurs assistant, former Spurs player. He now goes to New Jersey, Brooklyn. That's a guy who knows the game of basketball, really smart guy. So instead of going out and getting somebody crazy to run it, they actually got somebody good. He goes out and makes a very smart hire, not going for the fences and hitting a home run. He ends up getting, a triple, in my opinion, getting a really solid guy who, who needed to get an opportunity to be a head coach. What better way than to have one with a good GM, a roster you can build yourself, because I think he's going to have a really good relationship with Marks, and they're going to be able to build and change that roster over the next couple of years. They're not going to make the playoffs, I don't think, but they're going to be a little bit. They're going to be better than what they were this year, and they're going to be getting some few. And they're going to mix up their team a lot, because they're going to have a lot of guys in the next 2 years come off the books and be free agents. So we'll see the Nets look totally different in 2 years.
Absolutely. That's a good point. I agree with you. It is trending definitely in a good direction.
Indiana Pacers, Nate McMillan.
Yeah. Well, I thought they should have kept their coach that they had, Brad Vogel.
Yep, Frank Vogel.
Frank Vogel, yeah. I thought they should have kept him. But I'm a huge Nate McMillan fan. I thought he did a great job in Portland. You know about all those teams he had. So, he was one of the best coaches out there. He was actually an assistant on that staff, so he'll have some continuity with the players. I'll give it a B plus.
I love it too. I'm with you though. I stick with Frank Vogel if I'm Larry Bird. But what's funny is he says, and when he fired or didn't fire, but didn't extend the contract to Frank Vogel, Larry Bird said, "I think the shelf time for a head coach is 3 years." And what does he go out and sign Nate McMillan to? 3 years. So if you're Nate McMillan, you know exactly how much time you get till you're let go. go win a championship, because Frank Vogel did an outstanding job, overachieving, in my opinion, the 6 years he was there.
Yeah.
So if you're Nate McMillan, I don't see how your team gets much better than what they were this year. I think they obviously they get up a few ranks this year, maybe in the Eastern Conference. But at the same time, we've talked about it several times. The Eastern Conference is on the way up. There's several teams that have been down for a long time that's on their way up. So I think Nathan Mellon's going to do a solid job. I loved him in Seattle. Loved him in Portland. I think maybe he can do the same thing in Indiana. I just don't expect a huge difference and a huge impact than what we saw from Frank Vogel.
I agree.
And Frank Vogel in Orlando. What do you think?
Well, I give it an A. He did. I think he did a good job with a young, inexperienced Pacer team, turned them around. Always going to have a young, inexperienced Orlando team, but it's kind of the same situation as it's in Brooklyn. You know, they can kind of shape that roster and change some things around. So it'll take time, but he's a good young coach. So I'd give it an A.
If you're the Orlando Magic, this is the best thing that has happened to you in 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
You've had a few solid pieces, but you have Aaron Gordon, who's, you know, slam dunk champion, of course. That's the guy you can hang your hat on, really, to put your name out there and say, hey, we're the Orlando Magic, the team that has Aaron Gordon. You find a way, somehow your coach basically breaks up with you before you could break up with him. You're lost, you have a young team that doesn't have any, you know, real direction. You don't know who you're going to get at head coach, and Larry Bird says, here you go, here's Frank Vogel, one of the best coaches, in my opinion, in the league. You get him, that's a huge steal. That's an A for the Orlando Magic. They're going to mix some pieces here and there. They're going to be – this is exactly what a young team needs, is a guy who can preach fundamentals and defense, and that can maybe change the direction of that franchise.
I agree. They need a change. They have a few good young players, but they've been in rebuilding. You know, they're kind of like the Jaguars. They've been young and rebuilding for too many years, and it's time for them to start reaping the benefits and seeing some results.
Made official this week, Mike D'Antoni in Houston.
Oof. It's a gamble. I give it a B-, just to be honest with you. It could turn out to be an A+, or it could also turn out to be an S. So it's really a gamble. I'd give it a B- right now. He obviously, his best team was in Phoenix, so I kind of, you know, the desert west, Wild West kind of feel, I guess, sits well. It is a pretty good place for him. But, you know, he's done really bad his last two spots with the Lakers and with the Knicks. So, I don't know. He's about to prove himself to me.
What is what's one thing that they have in common, the Knicks, Los Angeles, and Houston?
The Knicks, Los Angeles, and Houston.
Yep. What is one thing this job has in common than those other two?
I'm not sure.
A superstar player who won't change for anybody.
That's true.
Carmelo Anthony did the same thing in New York. Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard did not work in L.A. And now you have James Harden running the show in Houston, basically doing whatever he wants to. This pretty much cements that Dwight Howard's not coming back to Houston this summer. It's going to be a huge hassle and a huge gamble for Mike D'Antoni. I love him. He's a really good coach. I love what he's done in Houston. Oh, not Houston, but Phoenix. And right. I loved him as an assistant in Philadelphia, really being there for a young core guys. But and this was a situation where no matter who it was, it was going to be the worst spot to go to for a head coach this year.
I can say that. A lot of turmoil in that locker room, yeah.
You're going to have a few players leave this summer, a few people come back in, and I don't know. James Harden basically right now runs the Houston Rockets because he has pretty much not, of course, the level, but he's getting up there to the level where he has the same management as LeBron James, where, you know, they called a players meeting 5 games into the season, and the next day they fired the coach. That's because James Harden wanted to.
That's a good point. Who's to say it won't happen again?
So, if you're Mike D'Antoni, I love you, brother, but, I mean, come on. And he said this is probably his last head coaching gig, so I wish it could be somewhere better. Moving on. What's that?
I can see it working out, though.
I hope so. I mean, it's crazy to think about how this team was in the Western Conference Finals last year, and then this year they're the 8 seed. They're a train wreck all season long.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's sports in 1 year for you. You know, what can change? That's just sports.
It's crazy.
And on the other side, we have a few more guys. Luke Walton, the Golden State Warriors assistant, gets his first head coaching gig, and his former team that he played for years in Los Angeles, been the new Lakers head coach.
I actually like this hire. I know you're not a big fan of it.
I didn't say that. I like it.
Well, not that you. Well, I thought. I mean, you wish you could have went to a better place.
For Luke, yeah. If you're the Lakers, you gotta be pumped. But if you're Luke, I feel bad for you, man.
Yeah.
You're right on that, because I think there are better jobs for Luke Walton out there. You know.
I think it'd be a big plus just because he's so young, and you know, he does have a little bit of head coaching experience, obviously this year, but he's still a little bit of an unknown. So I give it a big plus. But I think he's gonna have to be a really good hire.
You're going to have a really young core. Kobe, you know, the shadow of Kobe Bryant is finally, as much as I love Kobe, that's like the best thing that could happen to the franchise right now, is for them to officially begin a rebuild, get younger, get a new head coach in there who, you know, is actually a decent hire. They haven't had a good head coach in a long, long time, in my opinion. So Luke Walton comes in. He's a lot of potential to be a great head coach. You have a lot of young guys. You have another top two pick this year. You can obviously get Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons, depending on who Philadelphia takes and doesn't take. So you're in a pretty good spot to get another really star guy for your team to go along with a pretty good young core now. You just have to, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take, you know, 2 years or so to get them back to the level, you know, getting, you know, pushing the envelope to get back in the playoffs, because the West is still the West. It's tough to get in there. Utah, it was a team that looked really good all year long, and they just missed the playoffs by a game on the last day of the season. So you're going to have to beat teams like Utah and get back in the playoff hunt. And I see that taking 2 or 3 years at least to get back in that realm.
It'll be a rebuild, but, well, like you said, they do have a lot of young talent there.
How about
he's got some parts to work with?
How about Dave Yeager going to Sacramento of all places after being let go from Memphis?
Mistake, I think, by Memphis for letting him go. He is a really good coach. You couldn't help it that there was. I wonder if it was. It had to be something more than just the fact.
It was a lot of internal stuff. He actually had requested an interview last year for the Sacramento gig. And he wanted to speak with teams here and there, and there's a few internal things happening with him in the front office. They didn't really gel like McGellin, and there's a lot of things behind the scenes that made this happen. Of course, they wouldn't fire him just from what he did, because they did a fantastic job, you know, dragging this team to the finish line in the playoffs. But there's just some things they didn't agree on that forced this move.
And he likes Sacramento. If he wanted to apply for the job last year, you know, he's got DeMarcus Cousins, who is a good player, a headache, still a good player. That's a tough job. That's probably, you think that's the toughest job in the league? One of?
Going into this offseason, when they're looking for head coaches, there are two gigs that stood out to me that is like the worst, that I was hoping for a coach that I like to not go there. Was Houston and Sacramento.
Yeah. I think Houston would be a better job.
And Mike D'Antoni, I like him a lot. Like I mentioned, that's a gig that I hope it turns out to be, you know, a positive situation. And for Dave Yeager, I like what he did in Memphis. How could you not, grounding it out every single game in the regular season and pushing that team to the playoffs? It's going to be a really tough situation. The front office is clearly not at the same level where most of the league is. DeMarcus Cousins is basically, you know, an 8th to 9th grader out there just wanting to, you know, wanting to run the show his way and pout when he doesn't get it his way and he, you know, all this other stuff. So he has to grow up a little bit. He's also going to be a free agent next year, I believe. Rajon Rondo is a free agent this year. You have a few big decisions you have to make this year. And you think if DeMarcus Cousins walks next year, because, I mean, they're not going to trade him. it's going to be a crazy next few years for Sacramento. Hopefully, though, him, Cousins and Yeager can get along better than him and George Karl, and they can get some sense of a relationship building there and for the Kings.
I hope so. I'll give it a B just because I think he's a pretty good coach.
And in my opinion, one of the best hires. Doesn't make a lot of sense from what we heard. Going up to this point. That's the New York Knicks going out and getting Jeff Hornacek, who was let go by the Phoenix Suns halfway through the season this year after a pretty disappointing year for the Phoenix Suns. But to go out and get a really decent head coach, I like Jeff Hornacek. I think he got kind of the bad end of the deal in Phoenix. That wasn't a good roster that he had there towards the end. And now he gets one of the best gigs, of course, in sports is, you know, when the head coach of the New York Knicks. Hopefully that works out well. Hopefully if Phil Jackson, who, again, his contract's up next year, he can just leave when he wants to next year. And hopefully that doesn't mean that Jeff Hornacek is on the chopping block as well.
Hopefully not. I think he was obviously a good player, good point guard. You know, I could see him. You know, you could tell when he was a player that he'd probably be a head coach one day. You know what I mean? I think it could work out in New York, but he's kind of like the Kenny Atchison hire, but not as stable. So I'd give it a B minus on it. It's really not sure.
Let me ask you this. Who would you rather have, Jeff Hornacek or what's his face? The guy that's been, like, there for Kurt Rambis.
Kurt Rambis. Yeah, I figured they would just keep Kurt Rambis, in all honesty. But I guess I'd rather have
Come on, man. It's not that tough a choice. Jeff Hornacek or Kurt Rambis?
You going Hornacek?
Hornacek all the way.
Yeah.
Kurt Rambis is basically a joke.
Rambis has had plenty of opportunities, and yeah, you're right.
Jeff Hornacek's a really smart guy. He just needs to be given a full, you know, opportunity to do so, and coach his way. He's already said he doesn't run the triangle. He's, you know, gonna take pretty much. He's a guy who was built around that Jerry Sloan system in Utah. Really took a lot of his techniques from those guys over there in Utah. Of course, John Stockton, Karl Malone. Those guys, and Phil Jackson's a big fan of Jerry Sloan as well. So that's kind of the partnership they have there, where they see eye to eye on that.
I agree. I think he did a really good job too.
And finally, the last head coaching gig to get filled was, I believe, official 2 days ago, when the Memphis Grizzlies decided to hire David Fizdale, the assistant from the Miami Heat, and give him his first head coaching gig.
Who made the hire? I'm sorry.
Memphis Grizzlies.
Grizzlies, yeah. I don't know. I'd give it a B minus.
This kind of fits where they're at right now, because Mike Conley is probably going to walk, go somewhere else. Yeah. This is probably the end of the grinded out team we've seen for the last, you know, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So this is kind of that rebuilding stage for Memphis a little bit. They got a new head coach, his first year head coach. We'll see. I mean, he obviously was successful under Eric Spoelstra in Miami, 2 championships. But when you have LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and guys like that, you're in the East, and this is before the Warriors peaked. So, not saying he got all the credit for that championship, but this is a guy who has been around the game for a while, and now you just feel good for him to get his first head coaching job.
I agree. Maybe it'll work out for him. He's got, you know, like you said, they could be in rebuilding mode this time, you know, next year, just depending on, or this in just a few months, depending on where all the free agents go. So, I don't know. It could definitely be a challenge, but that's a good town to go to. They got a good fan base. Memphis does, I think, a pretty good job.
Couple more news to get to with the head coaches who still have their jobs and look like they're going to have them for the foreseeable future. Toronto Raptors extend the contract to coach Dwayne Casey for 3 more years and $18 million.
I like it. I mean, it ended a little disappointingly, but you know, this is the best thing that they've ever had, you know, in franchise history, and he may be the best coach they've had in franchise history. So I think he's a really good coach and a really good guy. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Now, his deal was going to be up at the end of next year, so they might as well go ahead and, I mean, what more can he ask for him to this point? He's got the Raptors in consecutive back-to-back really good seasons, the best franchise history this year, so, you know, pay the man, give him some more time to be the head coach and see if he can't turn around the East, because you know, just a few years away, we're going to see the end of LeBron and the East is going to open back up again.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Speaking of the East, another coach who got extended, and so did the president. The Boston Celtics extend the contracts of Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens, who, by the way, already had 3 more years left on his deal.
Wow. Might as well lock him up.
Yeah, they're going to lock him up for a while. So that's really good news for Boston. They obviously are on the way up, and they have the 3rd overall pick this year. They may, if you're Danny Ainge, you have to find a way to make a trade at the draft because you cannot draft 8 guys in this year's draft. They have 8 picks this year.
Wow, they'll do something.
Yeah, there'll be some news made around this year's draft for sure. And you got to think with that 3rd overall pick, you're going to see a star somewhere mixed around some trade rumors by the time the draft comes along.
Absolutely.
So, Clay, what is going on in football? I mean, Harbaugh and Nick Saban going at it, and, like, not even football, like Twitter battles or something. Obviously, the SEC Athletics was down at a convention in Destin, Florida this past week, and Nick Saban pretty much went on a rant about how he didn't want to talk about satellite camps and then talked about 5 minutes about how it's bad for college football. And that led...
Well, Saban can do that. He said, I ain't going to talk about this, and then an hour later he's talking about it.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right.
And then that led Jim Harbaugh to tweet out, which, you know, Nick Saban doesn't have a Twitter account. He pretty much hates anyone who does. But Jim Harbaugh tweeted out the other day after Nick Saban's press conference. He says, quote, "Amazing to me, Alabama broke NCAA rules and now their head coach is lecturing us on the possibility of rules being broken at camps. Truly amazing."
Wow.
To which Nick Saban was asked about Harbaugh's comments and said, quote, "I don't really care what he thinks or tweets. I say what I think is best for college football and the players."
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Have we seen the end? Is there something we don't know out there that's going to happen, or is it going to get much worse?
Surely we've seen the end, but I really don't know. This whole satellite camp deal, I mean...
Who cares?
Do what?
Who cares about satellite camps? Not like this bad. I'm sick of hearing about it.
Well, SEC teams care because they don't want, you know, the Big Ten coming down into their territory and stealing recruits. The thing that you know, I don't really like about it, the NCAA is going to have to step in. I mean, they stepped in and banned them, and then they got such a, you know, everybody whined because they banned it, and so they backed off, and now it's not banned anymore. But the NCAA is going to have to put some kind of rules and regulations on this because it's basically a way for these schools to get around and still recruit and talk to players even during the dead period when they're not supposed to be talking and recruiting players. You know, if you're holding these camps, quote-unquote camps, at these big high schools down in Florida, you know, like ING Academy, you know, you can't tell me that Harbaugh's not talking to players, trying to get them to come to his school, you know, during the dead period. And, you know, how do they decide which school is going to hold a camp at which high school? You know, is it going to be a bidding war? There's going to be money involved. You know, it could really turn into a really messy Wild West type situation. And I think that's kind of what Saban's really alluding to in the big picture. So I agree with Saban from that perspective. The NCAA is going to have to set up some well-defined rules and regulations about this satellite camp business, or it could really get out of hand.
Let me ask you this. What's the possibility of Nick Saban retiring from coaching football and becoming some sort of, you know, ambassador or commissioner of college football?
Commissioner of college football.
Which he said has suggested that it needs to be one several times.
Oh, he has suggested. Oh, just over football, not over basketball. Yeah, I could.
Right, say, right.
Yeah,
just a college football commissioner, basically.
Well, college football is such an animal that it needs its own commissioner. Yeah, I can agree with that.
How mad and angry would and bummed out would all other head coaches be if Nick Saban is the guy that is running this whole thing?
I don't think Saban would be interested. I mean,
No, could you imagine the headache?
Yeah. Once he gets done, he has a stressful enough life. I mean, he loves his job. He loves his life. But I think that he's got so much on his plate. Once he's done coaching, I think he's just going to enjoy retirement like he always said he would.
So
yeah, he's one of those guys that likes to work. You know what I mean? He ain't going to sit around.
That's the thing. I feel like he's already I can see him working when he's 100 years old.
How old is he? 68. He looks 58. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Could you imagine what he'd look like if he didn't eat little Debbie's every morning for breakfast?
I'm sure the rest of his dad's pretty healthy.
All right, Clay, so now we have the Warriors in the finals. That means, of course, that Oklahoma City is out. Kevin Durant is now a unrestricted free agent for the first time in his career. Real quick, how do you see this summer panning out for the Thunder? Have we seen the last of Kevin Durant in a Thunder uniform?
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to sign that one-year deal like you were talking about, the one-year max deal, and give it one more rodeo. Although it is, I've heard that the Atlanta Hawks are interested. You know, obviously the Boston Celtics, the Spurs. He's going to listen to some offers, but at the end of the day, I think he'll sign that one-year max and stay put for one more year.
You were 5 minutes away, two times, from getting past the Warriors, the best regular season team in history, some could say, and reaching the NBA Finals, and arguably being the favorite in the Finals. You were 5 minutes away twice, and now your season's over. What situation is any better than where you're at right now?
If you're the Hawks?
No, if you're Kevin Durant and the Thunder.
Oh, sorry. I guess you just reload and think, you know, maybe, you know, we had the series in our hands. Let's give it one more try. Maybe we can finish them off next year and make it to the Finals. But, I mean, they have been to a Finals before, and they lost to the Heat. So, I can see, you know, will they have any money? Can they add anybody to that roster next year? Or pretty much just their two draft picks?
If they're going to sign anybody, like bringing somebody in, they have to do it this year. Because
mid-level exception or, you know, especially minimum cost guys.
Well, you can have the money to pay Kevin Durant 1 year contract for about $20 million. Sign him to that, and then you could arguably bring in, because the cap is going up, of course, somebody like Aaron Afalo or somebody like Nick Batum, who can come in, who's just a straight up shooter, who can knock down shots, get his own shot, and really makes the defense. I mean, because if you double team, you can't double team Durant and Russell Westbrook and give up points in the paint, or have him kick out to someone wide open in the corner. That's the thing, is Robertson, as good as he got late in the playoffs, he's still missing wide open shots, and that's one thing that kind of, you know, hurt their back, that broke their back a little bit going down the stretch. So they get somebody like that this year, but they, like I said, they have to do it this summer, because next summer, if Kevin Durant opts in for this summer, next year you're going to have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, And I think Steven Adams becomes a free agent. Deion Waiters becomes a free agent. And his Cantor's contract's up as well. Then the next year, Serge Ibaka's up. So the whole team is basically going to be free agents in the next 2 to 3 years. You have to figure out who, you know, because you can't pay everybody. If you bring back Kevin Durant for a max deal worth $200 million, and then you sign Russ to a max contract, a little bit less than that, and then you have to make a choice of who you're going to get rid of. You can't sign Adams, Cantor, Waiters, and all these other guys back if you give your guys on, you know, a huge extension. So it's going to be a lot to think about and negotiate here. But you know what? If I'm putting my trust in anybody in the NBA, I go to R.C. Buford of the San Antonio Spurs, and then I go to Sam Presti of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
A GM who has drafted, not traded, but drafted Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, all these guys, you know, Steven Adams, all these guys that have made a huge impact over, you know, the last 6 years, 7 years, have all been guys they've drafted.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to think about where they might be if Kevin Durant were to leave, but I think he does sign the 1 year deal. We do this all over again next year. And then you know, if they don't knock off, say the Warriors win this year, they win back-to-back championships, do you really think the Warriors are going to win three championships in a row?
Probably not.
Probably not. Who's the best team who could dethrone them right now, probably, in the West?
In the West? Right now, obviously Oklahoma City.
There you go. So if you reload, you add a guy this summer, I think you have a pretty good shot of anybody knocking Golden State out in the West next year.
Right.
But the best thing is we're just under a month away from all this happening. July 1st is when free agency starts, and I cannot wait because that's like my favorite time of year is trade deadline and NBA free agency because there's so many things that go down, and I lock in to every single bit of it.
Oh, absolutely. It comes at you like bullets.
It really does. And there's so many rumors going around, and there's money to be made. Yeah. It's just so fascinating to me how this all gets done each and every year.
It's overwhelming at times. You just want to go into a hole and hide and come out and, you know, see the results.
To me, it's the best birthday present every year.
It is right on your birthday.
NBA free agency. And then they've actually, you know, this year they announced that they've cut down the length of time in free agency in the summer. To like it's like 10 days, and it was, you know, 14 or 15. So you had that time where you had a verbal commit basically, and then pretty much why that happened is because of what happened with DeAndre Jordan last summer, where he said he was going to leave Los Angeles, sign a max deal with Dallas, and then he like disappeared for a day or two, then decided to re-sign with the Clippers.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much why this is in place this year, is to prevent things like that happening.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I like it. I want people to, once they decide where they're going to go, sign them right there. Lock it down.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, Clay, we have game two of the NBA Finals Sunday. I think it's actually starting an hour earlier in game two at 8 o'clock, I believe, our time, Eastern, on ABC. What do you think? Who takes game two?
Man, it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a much closer game. You know, Golden State was obviously the better team last night, even without their best players playing. But, you know, I think Cleveland is due. You know, LeBron's pretty good in those games where he goes down 0-1, as you mentioned before. So I hate to say it, but I think Cleveland will even up the series.
It's so tough because if you're Cleveland, you don't want to get too far away from what you did in game one. You did so many things right. Warriors bench are not going to go off like they did in game one, but at the same time, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson are not going to struggle as much as they did in game one either. So it's going to be tough. I think Golden State's going to get it done. They're going to get 2-0 series lead and heading back to Cleveland.
Wow. I like it.
They've lost two games at home all regular season, and they lost, one in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that was to Oklahoma City in game one of that last series. And they've beat the Cavaliers now, was it six straight times?
I think so.
Including the regular season. So, I mean, come on. I think it's going to be closer. It's not going to be a 10-point lead the majority of the game. It's going to be a closer game. But I think the Warriors are going to pull it out and have a 2-0 series lead heading back to Cleveland.
I like it.
All right. Well, Clay, thank you so much for always being a part of this show, coming on, doing the podcast with me each week.
Hey, I love it, brother. No problem.
Remember to check out replays of new and archived episodes of the Sports Report podcast on iTunes. And make sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at The Sports Report. We'll see you next week for a brand new podcast.